The severe bun at the nape of her neck seems to be the cause of her forced smile. It makes me wonder if she suffers from frequent headaches, wearing her hair like that. Too tight a bunitis. It's Ms. McKnight, actually. She frowns, and I wonder if it was a good idea to correct her and earn a place on her bad side. She glances away from me, not rolling her eyes, though I can tell it's a struggle for her not to. She presses a button on the phone. Miss McKnight is here. She clicks a button with a perfectly painted nail and focuses on me. You can have a seat. Someone will be with you. I acknowledge her stern tone wordlessly and take the seat she indicates. A short time later, a tall, slender man with black-rimmed glasses and reading papers smashed to his face blindly comes toward the reception area as a brunette follows closely on his heels. Yeah, that's fine, just go with it, he says animatedly to the brunette. She nods and scurries off. Kate? The guy asks when he comes to a stop in front of me. He holds out his hand. I take it and give it a quick shake. That's me, I say brightly, unable to risk a glance at the 20-something receptionist who acted more like my mother. Jeff, he says, and adds conspiratorially, and don't mind her, she's a bit of a bitch. She likes to think she's like the gatekeeper in World of Warcraft. I have no idea what that is, but am grateful I'm not the only person she probably doesn't like. Follow me, and I'll show you to your desk and introduce you to the team. We end up in an area filled with cubicles, which are like mini offices with movable or knockdown walls. They're tall enough to give you privacy while sitting, but when standing, I can see the vast number of them that spread throughout the large open room. Through one of the openings, I spot a woman filling a banker's box with stuff. She lifts the heavy cardboard box onto the desk using the nifty handles on the sides. Jeff pauses and waits. I have the uncomfortable feeling that I'm replacing this woman. Don't worry, she isn't being fired or anything. Rumor has it she's dating the boss. Because of a non-disclosure agreement, she can't confirm or deny that, but she can't work for him because of it. The dark-haired woman glances up, and she's beautiful. If the rumors are true, I can see why any man would want to date her. She flutters her eyes before hefting the box and exits without a word. Bye, Miss Thing, he mutters at her back. To me, he says, so this is your seat, and I'll be the one to train you. He holds out a hand like he's a game show host. I sit because it's easier than the alternative. You log in this way? He begins to show me what to do and produces a paper with all the pertinent information. He pulls it from somewhere in the middle of a stack of papers he holds. I'm surprised by his organization. A while later into our training session, a voice startles us both. Miss McKnight, I found these at reception and was told they weren't delivered to you by mistake. Jeff and I turn as one. I'd seen the small vase full of purple and lilac flowers when I'd walked in. I wonder if they hadn't been delivered because the woman I'd replaced had still been in the office, or if the hateful receptionist is paying me back. For all I know, it's both. I take them from his awaiting hands. Thank you, Mr. Kane.
It's Ted.
The weight of the smile on his handsome face is almost too much to resist.
He's no cuddly bear, I tell you. Jeff mutters quickly. Quite the opposite, to be exact. Jeffrey, just because we're related doesn't mean I can't fire you.
Jeff rolls his eyes.
Please, give Kate and me a moment.
Jeff slips purse, and he wisely says nothing as he heads out of my cube. Thanks for the flowers, I say.
Everyone gets them.
Jeff's disembodied voice passes through the thin walls. Ted sighs.
Yes, it's company policy to make all new employees feel welcome. Some more than others.
Jeff's voice croons. Ted's jaw tightens. I don't want to stop Jeff because he seems like a really nice guy, and I don't want him to lose his job over warnings to me.
I hoped I could take you to a welcome lunch today.
Jeff's voice is clearer, and I realize he's standing in the cube behind me, leaning over.
I'm afraid she can't. We're taking her to lunch as a department. Ted is barely holding back his anger as he says, tomorrow, then.
He manages to make it sound pleasant before he tips his head to me and walks off. Jeff sighs loudly, and several other heads pop up all around me.
He is so dreamy,
a cute blonde in glasses breathes.
I know he is, says a woman with a thick Latina accent.
I would so do that.
From another woman whose caramel skin makes her hazel eyes stand out in her pretty face.
You are full of crap, Jeff says to the last woman. He hit on you and you turned him down.
She shrugs.
My man would kick my ass.
Jeff shakes his head.
Back to work, people.
Everyone, including the two guys who say nothing, disappear again behind the brown walls.
This desk is cursed, Jeff says. Don't fall for him. Promise me, I don't need to lose another employee.
I don't have time to ponder that, because Jeff switches back to business, like he's bipolar, as he makes his way over. We spend the day reviewing everything thoroughly. I'm impressed at his managerial skills. He seems to uncover my skill level and run with it. I learn more than I expect about their process in that single day, except for the informative lunch, where the office dirty laundry is aired and a maelstrom of names I will never remember. I feel like we've accomplished a lot. By the time I get home, I'm beat. Too lazy to cook and too hungry to wait for takeout. I make a salad with all the fixings. I'm just about to dig in when my phone rings.
Jenna,
I squeal. Hey, lovebug, has Louise gotten a fix yet? I sigh.
Really? That's what you lead off with?
I'm guessing that's a no. No worries, hun. We are going to a masquerade ball when I get to town.
Friday?
I ask, unable to contain my excitement to see her. I miss her like crazy. No, Saturday, but I swear you will get laid. I'm not having sex with a stranger, Jenna. Stranger, smanger, baby Jesus in a manger. Have you done anything I suggested dating-wise? I researched all the ways to meet new single people in D.C., and you do nothing with that golden information.
No,
I murmur.
Not even Match.com?
Of course not, and do not ask about those hookup apps.
What's wrong with swiping left?
She asks, while barely containing her laughter. The app she refers to has potential dating partners' profile pics show up on your screen. If you liked what you see, you swipe right to see if that person also likes your picture. If you don't like how they look, you swipe left. It seems too mean for me. Someone with low self-esteem might be pushed over the edge if they swipe right and that person swipes left.
So many things, I say.
Whatever, you will find the man of your dreams at the masquerade ball.
What's so special about this ball,
other than spending way too much on a dress I won't ever wear again?
What's so special?
All the movers and shakers of the city will be in attendance. There will be so many eligible bachelors there, you're bound to meet someone. And don't worry about a dress, I have that covered. By the time we get off the phone, I'm actually pretty excited. Not so much about meeting a man or dressing up and seeing celebrities, if what Jenna says is to be believed. I can't wait to see her. I think about Andy in a tux and how he looked the other night. I check my phone and he hasn't called. I ponder texting him, but decide maybe it's for the best that we don't have further contact. We have too much history for us to ever work. The next day, Jeff manages to wiggle me out of lunch with Ted. Easy when it's his assistant who calls while Jeff is sitting at my desk.
I have to go to a meeting.
Jeff sighs.
The vultures are here.
Vultures?
The auditors. They're like a Rottweiler with a bone. They latch on to any one mistake and make a huge deal about it.
For the first time, I feel bad. Here I am, one of those auditor types, spying on these good people. When they find out what Ted has contracted me to do, they'll hate me. I barely know them, but they've made me feel so welcome.
What's wrong? You look like you've seen a ghost.
An auditor, I jest. He laughs.
I'll be back in an hour, if I'm not torn to pieces.
I sit staring at the computer, wondering how to handle everything once the truth comes out, when I get a call from Mandy. Oh my gosh, he won't leave me alone. When will you be back? She asks.
When you admit you like Daniel.
I'm relieved she's able to take my mind off my current problem. He wants to hang out this weekend. That's so code for let's have sex, and I can't even remember the last time.
At least one of us had sex.
She gasps. You didn't have sex with Dr. Drop Dead Gorgeous?
First, I thought you didn't remember anything from that night.
It's slowly coming back, she admits.
And second, it's so not cool to mention doctor and dead in the same sentence.
I laugh. Oh, right, yeah, no good. How about Dr. McDreamy?
I think I've heard that one before.
I hear a tapping on the other end. I'll think of something. Changing the subject, I say, in the meantime, have you ever heard of an annual masquerade ball with all the important people of the city?
Oh my gosh, yes, she gushes.
A former friend of mine went one year and met a lawyer she ended up marrying. I heard she has three kids now.
You heard? She didn't tell you?
I cautiously ask. She ended up marrying a lawyer, she reiterates, making it clear what the problem was. Now, with all her society events, she doesn't have time for us little people. Anyway, are you going?
Yes, I begin. Promise me you won't marry a lawyer and forget about me, or just take me with you, she begs.
I snort and have to cover my mouth. I fear the people around me heard.
I would take you, but I'm the plus one. My friend has the invite and she's taken me.
Well, pack some condoms in your purse. I hear it gets a little wild.
I'm still thinking about Mandy's comment on Friday after I get home from work. Jeff has given me a thorough view of Ted's company's accounting system and practices. It's good, and he and his team seem to know what they're doing. I set up a meeting with Ted's office on Monday morning after filing a report with my boss. I'm gonna have to bring muffins, donuts, and coffee as peace offerings, and maybe take them all to fancy dinner to make up for my ruse. There's a knock at my door, and I'm pumped. Since I wasn't sure when I would get off of work, Jenna agreed to take a cab to my place when she lands.
Jenna,
I say, throwing open the door.
Only it isn't Jenna.
Andy.
Confused, I just stand there.
Since he hasn't called all week, I've assumed he's given up on us.
Kate,
he says, before leaning down to take my mouth in a possessive kiss. He pulls back and I dumbly say, Andy, again, like my mouth is on repeat. His smile widens into a smirk.
Kate.
With an arm around my waist, he dances me back so that the door can close behind him.
Andy, I'm so happy to see you. Come in.
He mocks. I start, but I'm unable to finish. Jenna will be here at any time, and I'm not ready for her to find out about him. She will have so much to say, none of it good. He pulls back to stand straight. His arms are gone, and I'm suddenly chilled by the cool air created between us.
I can go.
His face is so serious, and I know that things are already messed up between us.
No, it's not that. You didn't call all week. I assumed...
I waved a dismissive hand between us.
I didn't call, but you didn't either. I planned to wait you out and not push. But when I want something or someone, I don't play around. I want you, Kate. I can't get you out of my head. I think I said your name at least 20 times this week by accident in multiple conversations. I had to see you.
It's just that...
I try again, but his lips are on mine. He pulls me close and I feel his need pressed against me. I practically swallow his tongue as I give him entrance. He tastes of coffee and hazelnut. I find myself on my toes wanting to get closer. He obliges me by scooping me up under my butt. He turns and walks me over to set me down on my IKEA bistro table. It's not expensive solid wood, and I worry it won't hold us both if he has what I have in mind.
He manages to untuck my blouse from the skirt I wore to work. I hadn't changed yet, not knowing what Jenna might want to do tonight. His hands brand my sides. I want them to move north and touch me where I ache. I push at his coat on his shoulders. He takes the hint and lets it fall down his arms into the ground.
Fuck, Kate. I need you. I love the feel of you.
That one word makes me go cold. Love. It's as if he's reached into my chest and fisted my heart in his hands. Love. It's a dirty word in my book and brings me back to the past we both promised to leave behind. But it's there. I remember with aching clarity all the reasons why he should hate me and I should hate myself. He pulls back and focuses on my face.
Kate.
He says it so soft it almost sounds desperate. I can't. My voice breaks on the word and I feel on the verge of tears.
Don't do this.
He sounds calm, but I hear the anger behind the words, and he has every right to be angry.
You're gonna run, aren't you?
He steps back without bothering to wait for an answer. I cover my mouth with my hand, fearful of the sob that's banging at the back of my closed lips. I say nothing, because only pain will spew forth. He reaches down to gather his coat, and when he stands, I can see the bulge there for the taken. But it's too late. He turns and heads out the door. It rattles when it closes, making me jump. I'm about ready to release the sob when a knock comes at my door. I run to it, hoping I can straighten things out. When I open it, I realize my mistake. A wide-eyed Jenna points a finger down the hall. That guy looks a lot like... Her words trail off when she turns and gets a good look at my face. Honey, what's wrong? That's when my floodgates open. Was that? I shake my head. I can't talk about it right now. She walks inside, drops her suitcase, and I'm immediately engulfed in a fierce hug. We don't have to talk about it tonight, but we will talk about it before I go, she declares. Tonight? Wine and ice cream. Plus, she steps back, and from her massive purse she pulls out a DVD. I brought this. Proudly, she holds up a copy of the latest installment of the Magic Mike series. It could have been 16th or 17th, for all I know. We can watch this on mute. On mute. I sputter, wiping at tears. What they're saying is not important. She laughs. Let's just get drunk. Tomorrow, you get laid. So despite everything, she isn't giving up her pursuit of happiness for Louise. Chapter 10, Past.
Kate, I have a surprise plan for you this weekend. Are you game?
The excitement in Drew's voice is contagious. Laughing, I say, as long as it's legal, yeah.
Oh, it's legal, sweetheart. The weather is supposed to be gorgeous. Highs in the high 70s and lows in the mid-50s. It'll be perfect for what I have in mind. I'll come up tomorrow night and we'll leave on Saturday morning. You're not squeamish, are you?
Squeamish? What does he mean? You mean like seeing blood and stuff? You're not going to make me look at icky medical stuff, are you? I have to hold the phone away from my ear because his laugh is ear-splitting.
No medical stuff. This is all fun.
That's a relief. Okay, then no, I'm not squeamish.
Great. I'll see you tomorrow. Can't wait.
It leaves me puzzled over what he has in store. The next night, Drew pulls up, his car packed with all sorts of things. I peek in the back, asking, what you got in there?
Stuff for our little trip tomorrow.
Where are we going?
You'll find out.
We walk inside, arm in arm. Jenna is on the couch, so we're stuck chatting with her. We end up ordering pizza and eating dinner together. Finally, we head to bed. I didn't think I'd ever get you to myself, I say, as I pretty much attack him when my bedroom door closes. His arms wrap around me, and he's a willing partner.
I've missed you, Kate. You are a sight for my greedy eyes, but we need some sleep because we're getting up to catch the sunrise in the morning.
Huh?
The sunrise. Tomorrow is a nature day for us.
Nature day? What the hell does that mean? I had plans to wallow in the bed with my sexy boyfriend and he wants to, what, watch the birds and bees and the sunrise. What the hell?
Don't look like that. You're gonna love it. Just wait. Lift your arms.
When I do, he strips me of my shirt. Then he helps me remove my jeans. When I'm down to my unders, he tells me to get in the bathroom and brush my teeth. As I'm brushing, I keep trying to guess where he's taken me. I come up with one huge blank. When I come out of the bathroom, I fully intend to interrogate him, but he stands here, shirtless, in his boxers and wearing the cutest smile. All my questions evaporate.
My turn.
He disappears, and I ogle him as he goes. I climb into bed and wait. When the door reopens, he's smacking his lips, and he reminds me of a cute little kid. When he slides under the covers, my eager hands reach for him, but he grabs them and kisses them.
Kate, honey, you know if we start, we'll never wake up before dawn.
What in the world is so bloomin' important that we have to get up so early?
I can't tell you.
He stills my roaming hands.
Showing you will be so much better.
Damn, this better be worth putting off sex for the night. Okay, then kiss me goodnight, oh secretive one.
You'll love it, I promise.
He says as he presses his lips to mine. I won't love it nearly as much as I love having you inside of me.
Damn, woman, you drive a hard bargain.
I think you have that backward. You're the one driving the hard bargain. He pinches my butt and says,
smartass.
Curling up alongside of him, I lay my head on his chest, and the next thing I know, he's shaking me awake.
Kate, come on, get up and shower.
Huh?
Up, shower, it's time.
What the hell time is it?
5.
Shit. He drags me out of bed behind him, and we hit the shower. While I'm drying my hair, he tells me he's gonna pack for me, since he refuses to tell me where we're going. I find that unusual, but he's seen me pull clothes out before, so he knows where I keep everything. Since it's only one night, I don't worry too much. In record time, we're out the door. We drive to a local diner and grab breakfast to go, bacon and egg sandwiches and coffee. Then we hit the road. It's still dark out, and I pester Drew about our final destination.
You'll see. You don't have much longer to wait.
About 20 minutes later, we pull into a state park and drive through the entrance. A state park?
Yep.
It's all he says. He drives a bit before he parks the car.
Come on,
he says, extending his hand. I follow him along a trail that leads to a wooden bridge. The bridge crosses a narrow river, and on either side there are steep rock formations. It's quite beautiful, even in the pre-dawn gray light. I'm sure when the day is bright, it's spectacular.
Have a seat, my lady.
Drew indicates a place on the side of the bridge, so I sink down and sit. He does the same.
Now watch over there.
He points over the rocks, and we wait. About 15 minutes later, the sun inches up over the horizon, and its rays cast the rocks in an orange-red glow. At first, it's not noticeable, but when the sun gets to a certain point, it makes the rocks look like they're glowing. It happens so fast and lasts for only a minute or two. If we weren't here at precisely the right moment, we would never have seen it.
Oh my God, how did you know?
By sheer accident. I literally stumbled upon it camping one day. It's really something, isn't it?
It's phenomenal. I've never seen anything like it. Thank you for showing this to me.
I scoot my butt around to face him and notice he's not watching the sunrise at all. He's staring right at me. My body heats and my stomach flutters as that familiar sensation begins to grow within me. But then his words cause my heart to trip all over itself.
Kate, it's nothing compared to you.
His hand reaches for mine as he leans in to kiss me.
Before my brain goes to mush, all I can think is Drew McKnight is all kinds of amazing. We stay wrapped up in each other until the sun is high and the day is brighter. When he helps me to my feet, I can't help but observe his impish grin.
"So what do you have up your sleeve now, mister?"
He winks.
"You'll see."
We walk back to the car, and after a few minutes of driving, we pull into the ranger station.
"Stay right here. I'll be back in a second."
He hops out and jogs inside. A couple minutes later, he gets back in the car. We drive around, and soon we pull into a parking place that's marked as number 12. It has a gravel square, picnic table, campfire ring, and now I figure it out. "So, hotshot, I take it we're camping?"
"Yep,"
he says eagerly as he pulls the car to a stop. When he turns to me, he still wears his boyish look.
"How do you feel about it?"
You know, I went to camp as a kid and loved it, but I've never tent camped, so I'm game. "But I have a question. Is this one of those tests?" Confusion furrows his brow.
"What do you mean?"
"Well, I've known guys who've tested girls before by taking them places or doing things they loved, and if the girl didn't love it, then that was it."
"So you're asking me that if you don't love camping, am I going to end it with you?"
"Pretty much," I say with a slight frown.
"Kate Forbes, do you really think that little of me?"
He looks crushed.
"Because if you do, I've done a terrible job of showing you how I feel about you."
I suck in my breath at his words. I can't let him feel like this, so I blurt out, "No, it's just my inexperience, I suppose." Now I feel shitty for asking him that.
"Hear me now. If you hate camping, we will never do this again. That's not to say I won't, but you won't have to endure one more night of it. Understand?"
"Perfectly. And thank you. So you really love this, huh?" His smile returns as he says,
"Oh yeah, just wait."
He starts pulling out all this gear from the back of his 4Runner, and who knew? There is so much you need when you camp. After a while, I stop asking him what things are because I don't want to be a pest. The day has warmed up significantly, and Drew has shed his sweatshirt, so now he wears a short-sleeved t-shirt. He's putting up the tent, and I stare at the muscles in his arms as he works. I've never really focused on them before because I was always lured in by his abs and pecs. But damn, those arms are amazing too. They ripple as he grabs this and that, and I find myself licking my lips over and over. But what I really love is when he has to raise his arms and his shirt exposes that sexy strip of flesh. It gives me all sorts of ideas. It makes me want to fall to my knees and take a nibble here and there. I think I'm gonna love camping.
"Hey, Kate, can you hand me that hammer over there?"
"Yeah, sure." I find said hammer and then stand behind him as he pounds in the stakes. Only I don't watch him do that because now I'm riveted on his ass. He's wearing my favorite jeans. They mold to his cheeks perfectly, and I want to drop to my knees and bite him.
"Kate? Kate? Kate, where are you? Hello?"
"Oh, sorry, what do you need?"
"I need help with the fly."
"Really? You need help with your fly?" Excitement surges through me. He rolls his eyes, something he never does.
"No, Kate, not my fly. The fly. It covers the tent to protect us if it rains."
"Oh," I answer in a small voice, feeling disappointed and slightly stupid.
"What's wrong?"
"I kind of got excited about helping you with your fly." Answer. As a smile forms on his face, his eyes dance with wickedness. He drops whatever he's holding, takes one giant step to reach me, and suddenly I'm enveloped in his arms before he kisses me. And it's some kind of kiss. Rough, demanding, and completely unlike gentle Drew. He manages to unzip the tent without letting me go. We crouch down and crawl inside.
"Now you can help me with my fly all you want."
My hands fumble with his zipper as I go to work on his jeans, and I feel his hands doing the same on mine. A question pops into my head.
Is anyone around us?
I don't know, nor do I care.
Can they see through this tent?
No, but they can hear.
Good to know. I finally get his pants pulled down enough for his cock to make an appearance, and all I want to do is lick it. So I do. He tastes so good and feels like velvet on my tongue.
Kate, that's so fucking good.
He strokes my hair in sync with my mouth. The faster I move, the faster his hand moves. Then he stops my movement.
I want inside of you.
I rise up and he roughly tugs off my jeans, freeing my legs. He grabs a condom out of his pocket and puts it on.
Ride me, Kate. I love to see you on me.
I love to ride him as well, so I oblige us both. I sit down onto pleasure I've only known with Drew. There isn't anything sweet about what we do. It's hard and relentless as we lose control with one another. When our mouths slam together in a searing kiss, our hands join, and the brief slowness turns quick and rough as we soar to our peaks. His kiss swallows my groans and we both climax, Drew right after me.
Jesus, what the hell was that?
I ask when I can form a coherent sentence again. I'm still on his lap as we stare at each other.
Damn awesome, that's what.
He runs his nose along my neck and plants a dozen kisses there.
Every time with you is...
He slowly shakes his head as if to form words.
You never disappoint, Kate.
I can't stop the wide grin. It feels empowering that I can move a man the way it seems I've moved him. Can I just say that so far, camping is pretty cool? His body rumbles with laughter.
I'll have to remember that line about the fly. That was priceless.
My grin turns into a megawatt smile. Okay, the truth is I'd been checking out your ass. I can't help that you have such a fine ass.
My ass? You're joking.
I shake my head. Why would I joke about your ass?
My ass, huh?
He shrugs. It's a damn fine ass. He bellows a laugh.
I guess we should finish setting up camp.
Probably. I don't object, because he's doing most of the work and I love watching him. The day is filled with hiking to a gorgeous waterfall. By the time we make it back to camp, it's time to get dinner going. That night, he cooks salmon in a cast iron skillet that he puts on the grate the camp provides over the wood fire. He tosses a couple of potatoes wrapped in foil into the fire beforehand and has pre-made a salad.
I can't believe this. It's restaurant worthy. I figured we'd be eating hot dogs or burgers on the high end. But this salmon, it has that smoky flavor from the fire.
Yeah, it came out pretty good.
So you've been camping your whole life?
Eagle Scout here.
He gives me the salute.
Eagle Scout? I'm impressed. You never cease to amaze me.
But they didn't teach you how to cook salmon in Eagle Scouts.
He's laughing now.
No, this is my own invention. Every summer, a group of us go camping and fishing, and we try to outdo each other in the cooking arena. This is actually a test dish for me. I've never done it before, but I figured it had to be good.
He starts putting the graham crackers, marshmallows, and chocolate out for the s'mores. My mouth waters.
You ready?
Licking my lips, I say, yeah. He hands me a stick and a marshmallow. I load it up and start the roasting. The fire crackles and our marshmallows are finished. We assemble our dessert and I take a bite. Marshmallow gushes out and smears all over my chin. Drew looks at me and shakes his head.
These things taste so good, but they are a mess.
Then he leans over and licks the gooey stuff off my chin.
I think you taste better than the marshmallow.
When he pulls back after not kissing me, his eyes crinkle at my confusion and longing. Then I realize he's teasing me, and we laugh.
How come you didn't get any on your chin?
I ask. He shoots me a sly look and waggles his eyebrows.
Kate, I'm an Eagle Scout, remember?
I almost spit out my mouthful of s'mores. Then he stands, stokes the fire, and puts another log on it. I love to watch him take care of this stuff. It's so manly and sexy. Drew?
Yeah?
I have to pee.
Okay, you have a couple of options. The camp has restrooms. They're a fair walk from here, or you can pee in the woods.
Pee in the woods? Aren't there critters in there?
Yeah, they have to have a home, Kate.
So, like, pee in the woods. What if I'm peeing in the woods and a snake jumps up and bites Louise? He clamps his lips together, and it's so obvious he's trying his best not to laugh. I let him know. Don't you laugh at me, Drew McKnight. I'm scared to pee in the woods, and I hate snakes. Louise does, too.
Louise loves my snake, Kate.
I punch him in the arm. That's not fair. This is real. I have to pee, and I'm afraid.
Right. I'll go with you and ward off any wayward snakes that might be thinking of jumping up and biting Louise. How's that?
I narrow my eyes at him. What about other varmints like rats and possum? He slowly inhales and clamps his lips again. Then he stands, holds out his hand, rifles through a bag, and pulls out a roll of toilet paper. He turns on a flashlight and leads the way into the woods. When he finds the perfect spot, he says,
"Here,"
and turns his back while I squat to pee. But in my haste, I do something really stupid. I yank my jeans down and leave on my unders, so I pee my pants. Oh no!
What?
He spins to face me. I just peed my pants.
How'd you do that?
I explain, and he drops the flashlight as he doubles over laughing. Now we have to hunt the flashlight, and I'm stumbling around trying to get my jeans off without getting my pee on them.
So you peed on your unders? I'm not sure what's funnier, you peeing on yourself or the fact that you call them unders.
Oh, yeah, that's what my mom calls them, so I just sort of inherited the term.
I see. So, unders then.
Yeah. Shit, did you find the flashlight? Laughing, he says.
Yeah.
I get straightened out and decide to walk back to the tent bare-assed so I can clean myself up appropriately. Drew laughs all the way back, and I can't blame him. Can anyone see me like this?
I don't think so. Besides, the water spigot is behind the tent, so it blocks the view. Here's some soap and a washcloth if you want to clean off.
Thank you for being so prepared.
Eagle Scout.
I grumble and become the speedy cleaner-upper, and I'm back in my jeans in no time. I cannot believe I did something so dumb.
I'd have to agree.
Sometime in the middle of the night, I wake to hear all kinds of noises. Growling, scratching, and other creature sounds. Drew, something's trying to tear up our tent.
Huh?
A sleepy Drew asks. There's something outside of the tent trying to get us. Wake up.
It's nothing, probably a raccoon. Go back to sleep.
He conks back out, leaving me to fret, awake. Of course, the giant man-eating animals threatening to shred our tent and eat us alive resume their activities. I know there are dozens of them right outside of that flimsy piece of fabric that affords me zero protection from the monstrous beasts. I pull the sleeping bag over my head as if that will help, but the noises grow even louder.
Drew, wake up! I think there's a grizzly out there!
He sits straight up in the tent, and his head wobbles around like one of those old-timey bobble-headed dolls. I think he's still asleep, so I grab his arm and shake him.
Wake up! There's a bear out there.
What are you talking about?
Something is trying to eat us alive.
One hand rubs his eyes.
Jesus, Kate, nothing is out there other than pesky raccoons or maybe skunks.
Skunks? What the hell?
Immediately, I scramble for the tent exit. Only there's a problem. I'm still zipped in my sleeping bag, and it's one of those mummy styles that narrow at the feet. In my crazed state, I try to stand, but end up taking a 3-inch step and face plant in the dirt right outside the entrance to the tent. Now, I'm frantically trying to get up and run from the so-called grizzly bear or skunks that threaten to eat or stink me to death. My arms flail and I can't do anything because of the stupid sleeping bag. Two arms grab me and haul me backward into the tent. I'm a mermaid out of water, wrapped in downy fluff, thrashing around like a madwoman. That is, until a strong and sexy body traps me under it, grabs my chin, and plants a searing hot kiss on my lips. Heat replaces panic, and my arms stop flailing and find their way around his neck.
fingers winding into his thick waves. What's that mewling? It's only after he lifts his mouth off mine that I realize it's me.
Much better, he says. There is no bear, sweetheart. You're perfectly safe in here with me. What do I need to do to prove it to you?
I don't know. I'm really scared.
I know, and I don't want you to be. Let's have a look around outside. Would that make you feel better?
Maybe, I say, my voice squeaking.
Okay, let's go.
We get out of our sleeping bags, put our shoes on, and he grabs the flashlight. Then he does a thorough inspection outside of the tent, and we don't find a single thing. He turns to me, tucks a tendril of hair behind my ear, and says,
Honey, this is their home. The little creatures live here in the woods. Many of them come out at night to eat. They live on plants and things. They won't hurt you, I promise. Sometimes they make noises when they feed, and it sounds like they're growling, but they're not. They're more afraid of you than you are of them. Would you be afraid of a rabbit if you saw one?
No.
Then you need not be afraid of these either.
But a skunk?
Won't bother you unless you threaten it.
I hang my head, feeling rather idiotic. He puts a finger under my chin, saying,
Hey, you didn't know. This is your first time out here. It's okay. Let's go back to bed.
He takes my hand, and I feel comforted and not chastised. Wrapped in his arms, I fall into a deep, hard sleep. By morning, I wake up surprisingly refreshed. My stomach lets out the biggest roar, and Drew chuckles in response.
I guess that's my wake-up call. Time to feed my girl.
Are you gonna cook again?
Oh, yeah. You are getting the full camping breakfast.
Is there anything I can do to help? I feel pampered, but bad that he's doing all the work. He looks at me earnestly.
You can tell me you're having a good time.
Last night freaked me out, but I'm honestly having a good time with you. He smiles, then proceeds to make coffee, bacon, eggs, and pancakes.
I can't believe you did all this.
I say around a mouthful of pancakes and syrup. It's so good.
Eagle Scout.
That grin of his makes me want to kiss him. I shake my head at him. Then I say, Thank you for putting up with me last night. I guess that's what you meant when you asked me if I was squeamish.
Sort of. That and if you minded getting dirty.
He reaches over and wipes my chin.
Just a bit of syrup you got going there.
Jeez. First the marshmallow and now this.
You look cute with stuff all over your face.
Just what a girl wants to hear.
Okay, how's this? You're sexy enough to lick Kate.
Oh boy. And will you follow through with that? Asking wasn't necessary. Drew always follows through. He scoops me up and zips us back into the tent. Later that morning, we pack up and head home. Well, head back to my home. Once there, Drew walks me to my apartment. He sets my bag down and holds my hand.
All week, I look forward to our weekends together. I had a great time.
I fall headfirst into his blue irises. I did too. Peed on unders and animal noises excluded. I'm sorry it's over.
I didn't mind either of them.
He pushes strands of wayward hair behind my ear before cupping the back of my head to kiss me. This time, the kiss is slow, and I feel something tighten within me, and it isn't just my hormones. I feel it in my chest. This man has turned out to be everything I never thought I could have. As the emotions well up, I feel something pool in my eyes. When he pulls back to look at me, his expression turns into concern.
What's wrong, Kate?
I shake my head, afraid of what I might be beginning to feel. Nothing. I think something got in my eye. I'm not lying. The unshed tears still burn there. His eyes focus on me, and I smile. He leans in and blows across my eyes.
Better.
I blink back the tears and nod. I'm gonna miss you. I wish you lived closer.
I'm gonna miss you too, my camping girl.
He licks his lips and pauses as if he wanted to say more.
Next weekend?
I nod, not strong enough to admit I'm falling hard for him. I can only hope that if he doesn't feel the same, I don't break when I hit bottom. He presses a sweet final kiss to my lips before he turns to leave. Next weekend, I say more to myself as he walks away. Chapter 11, Present. Rolling over in bed, I encounter a wall of pillows.
Hey,
Jenna says, her head popping up on the other side of the wall.
I'm not ready to get up.
Her whine makes me smile because I've missed this girl so much. Only my grin turns into a frown as my head throbs. I can't remember how much wine we consumed last night. My confusion doesn't stop the playful jab that comes from my mouth.
You talk in your sleep. You know that?
I do? What did I say? She asks anxiously. Something about Brandon? Her face lights up.
Don't mention that name when we meet Kenneth tonight.
Who's Kenneth? My nose wrinkles up. She waves a hand in the air as she falls behind the pillows to hide herself.
I met him at the country club a few months ago. I don't get to see him often. He lives here most of the year, but his family home is in Charleston.
You haven't told me about him. She doesn't come up to face me.
You know, it hasn't been serious, just a few hookups. I think he's smitten with me. He comes from all the right stock still.
I decide not to press her. She hasn't mentioned him before, but I'll trust what she tells me.
You kick, you know? That's why I have these pillows here.
I do not. I whine. You do, too. I swear, I might have been better off on the couch. At least I wouldn't be black and blue.
I almost believe her until she bursts out laughing. I toss a pillow at her.
It would be stupid for one of us to sleep on the couch when I have this queen-sized bed. I push up to my feet, not really ready to get up for the day.
Our conversation, like my brain this morning, drifts from topic to topic.
If you wear those to bed, I know now why you aren't getting laid. I glance down at my oversized t-shirt and fuzzy sleep pants with tiny pigs printed all over them.
What's wrong with pigs?
I ask. She sits up, and as I make my way toward the door to go to the bathroom, I add, ducks aren't any better. She starts making quacking noises, and I have a nostalgic moment. It's so strong, I have a wild moment of wanting to move back to Charleston, so I'll have more moments like this.
Don't go all lezzy on me. Don't get me wrong, a little girl-on-girl action never hurt anyone. But you're looking at me like you should look at Dick.
I feel my mouth turn into a pout as I change course and throw myself at her.
I missed you so much,
I say as I land on the bed and crush her in a hug.
Okay, I missed you too.
She squeezes back, and then I let her go. She sits up and props herself against the headboard.
I know you told me everything last night, but we really didn't talk about it. I'm still mad at you for not telling me until now.
I sigh and glance at my cuticles, which suddenly need my attention.
Don't you mutter at me, she says.
I can't remember saying anything.
You ended up in bed with Drew, and you say you didn't do the dirty with him. And the way you were all disheveled at the door, I would have sworn you had sex with him if you hadn't said otherwise. And you wonder why Louise is rusty.
Louise isn't rusty. Sex is like riding a bike.
In your case, a rusty bike, considering how long it's been.
I fall back into the wall of pillows.
What am I gonna do?
I can't answer that for you. Part of me thinks that he's obviously still crazy about you, and you would be crazy not to jump at that chance.
How can I? Why doesn't he hate me?
I bury my face in my hands.
Hun, he may be able to blame you for leaving, but he knows damn well why you left.
I press the heels of my palms into my eyes.
Every time I look at him, the guilt, it hurts.
She lets out a heavy sigh.
I haven't said this before because you had too much going on then, and you didn't need advice like this. But you need to forgive yourself. You did what you thought you had to do. He's obviously not mad at you. And it can't be easy for him either. If he's willing to give it a shot,
he wants me to call him Andy.
Like, that somehow wipes the slate clean and gives us a brand new start.
Drew?
She asks. I nod and she adds, when I saw him, I swear it was like seeing a ghost. I glare at her.
Too soon?
She wears an I'm sorry expression.
A ghost, really?
I wave a hand. I'm sorry, Kate. Drew, Andy, what the fuck? He's here now.
You have to decide what you want, and maybe going out tonight is the answer.
How is that?
There will be plenty of men.
I cut her off.
How will that help?
She holds out a hand. Wait. Plenty of men. Rich men. Money doesn't move me, Jenna. Will you let me have a word?
I sigh, then nod. If you keep an open mind and you meet someone that interests you, then you know you're ready to move on. If you keep hiding out, how will you know if he's the answer or not?
She has a point.
Fine, but I'm not sleeping with anyone.
You don't have to.
What? You're giving up your love quest for Louise?
I'm not giving up. I'm giving you a pass for tonight. Plus, I have a feeling the man of your dreams will be there tonight.
Are you saying that because Drew won't be there?
I'm saying it because I have this feeling in my gut. Plus, it doesn't hurt tomorrow is Halloween. Something's in the air, and tonight's masquerade ball is a grown-up version of a Halloween party. Lots of tricks and mischief. Time for you to give up some of your treats.
Her eyes spark to life, and I know that look. I groan. I also know if I don't get out of here, she'll make plans for us to go to the spa or something. So I get to my feet and make a beeline for the bathroom. As I shower, I think she's right. I haven't given anyone a real shot since him, and maybe it is time for me to spread my wings and find out if this bird is ready to fly. A few hours later, after coffee and breakfast at a cafe near my apartment, a delivery arrives. A woman artfully carries several bags into my apartment.
What's this?
I ask Jenna, hiding behind the closed door of my bedroom because I don't want to ask in front of the impatient-looking woman.
It's the Belfort treatment.
She says, like, that's the answer to everything. When I fold my arms over my chest, she flutters her lashes and sighs.
Kenneth is providing my dress and yours, although he doesn't know it yet.
That's Jenna for you. She's going to stick the guy with the cost for my dress, too.
Jenna, I can't.
You can, because if you don't go, I don't go.
She shrugs, like that's the end of it.
Only it is, because protesting doesn't work. I'm forced back into the living room as the woman unzips gorgeous dress after gorgeous dress from individual garment bags by well-known high-end designers. There are shoes and clutches as well, specially selected for each outfit. There's even lingerie. The woman, whose nose couldn't be any higher in the air, finally leaves after showing us everything and promising to pick up whatever we don't want the next day.
Come on, pick one, and then we can check each other out.
I point to the bags. No, you first. This is your day, Cinderella. Your fairy godmother just left.
Her mouth purses. I'm not Cinderella at this ball. I have my prince, and it's time you find yours, or at least one to try out for the night.
Fine, but Cinderella doesn't pick first. Her evil stepsisters get the best dresses.
She looks aghast, pointing at herself.
I'm evil?
Yes, yes, you are.
I laugh. You're the one that wants me to get dolled up and laid by some stranger as long as he can get to my glass slipper.
Well, true.
She makes a fuss, spinning around and leaving the room in a flourish with all the bags. She tries on the gowns and settles for a royal blue dress with lacy appliques that hide certain body parts while revealing skin in a way that is going to make Kenneth's jaw drop.
Here, try this one.
She hands me a pure white dress. It isn't the one I would have picked, but she reminds me that Cinderella doesn't get a choice. So much for my big mouth. The gown dips low in a plunging neckline. If not for a sheer piece of fabric across the middle, I would pop out of it. Still, I won't be able to wear a bra, and by the clingy look of the dress, I might not be able to wear underwear either. After getting into it, I know I will have to go totally bare underneath the dress.
When I walk out, Jenna excitedly claps.
That's it. That's the one. I haven't tried on anything else.
I complain.
You don't have to. Your body is perfect for it.
I hate to admit it, but the dress is stunning. There are no price tags, but I know the dress costs a pretty penny based on the store name printed on the business card the woman handed us before she left.
After changing back into our own clothes, we walk down the street to one of my favorite restaurants and eat a light lunch.
Jenna's afraid if we eat too heavy, we might be too bloated to fit our dresses well, and I have to agree. The fabric on both is unforgiving. Every curve and rut will show. Later, I shower and spend an hour flat ironing my hair to add some curls as Jenna helps me create a half up and down do. I can't help but feel like a princess when a limo arrives to pick us up. The ball is at a place I am unfamiliar with, so I'm glad for the ride. We are ushered out in red carpet style fashion and even stop to pose for pictures before we enter. I recognize the speaker of the house who stands behind us. Although that is kind of cool, I wonder if all the men will be silver foxes or if some younger guys will make an appearance tonight. Inside, a pleasant melody plays and some people dance as others mingle, but it's too quiet and I can't put my finger on it. I slip on the white mask trimmed in silver with a feather plume on one side that was in a separate bag inside the garment bag for my dress. Jenna slips on her royal blue mask covered in black lace.
Jenna,
says a man with striking features and hair dark as midnight.
Kenneth,
she says with a squeal and practically leaps into his arms. They only have eyes for each other for a moment, and I kick myself for not asking more about him, because I've only been caught up in my own life.
Kenneth, this is my best friend, Kate McKnight. Kate, this is Kenneth Belfour.
He takes my hand and kisses it.
Kate, I've heard so much about you.
I catch his accent and smile. A nod because I don't want to lie and repeat what he said. Before I have a chance to say anything, a stern-looking woman in a server's attire appears. She puts her finger to her lips. Kenneth appears amused, but cordially nods and places a finger against his lips in acknowledgement. I turn to Jenna with wide eyes when I finally get why it's so eerily quiet, despite the music. No one is talking. Jenna shrugs. I shake my head to let her know we will talk about it later. How did she expect me to meet anyone if we aren't allowed to talk? A man walks up next to Kenneth and points at me. Kenneth smiles and gives the thumbs up. The guy takes my hand and kisses it. Seems to be the thing to do. I find myself dipping in a curtsy. He gestures to the dance floor, and I agree because Jenna and Kenneth have conveniently disappeared. At first, the music is classical, and we dance like we are at court in front of a king. I almost wish I'd known what kind of dance would have been required so I could have taken lessons. However, as the night wears on, the music changes into something a bit more contemporary. My partner is relentless, and I begin to tire of being on my feet. Thank goodness my stomach growls are absorbed by the beat that continues to pick up with more heady sounds. Jenna's salad choice for my lunch has fled the building, and I'm starving. I'm about to request a break when another man appears. His salty but more peppery hair is distinctive. That and Ted's mouth are a dead giveaway as to who he is. He nods at my partner, and the guy nods back before stepping away. I'm not given the chance to agree or disagree to the handoff before Ted sweeps me away. He seems to favor the formal way of dancing as he sweeps me across the floor in contradiction to the music. I wonder how I don't stumble or step on his toes as he leads me through complicated steps. When the song ends, I shake my head. Either I'm dizzy from him or lack of food and water. I gesture with my hand, like tipping a glass to my lips, as I glance above at the large chandeliers that dot across the room. He nods, takes my hand, and leads me to a table with drinks and finger foods. A line of waiters appears in front of him with several trays of drinks and hors d'oeuvres. They take his attention off me for a second. As hungry as I am, I cram a cracker with some sort of substance on top into my mouth like an errant child.
When he turns back, amused, I know I'm caught. I cover my mouth and chew quickly. He hands me a flute of champagne, and I immediately drain it to clear my throat. We laugh before being hushed by the noise police. They seem to be everywhere. After a warning from a librarian-looking woman, he winks at me conspiratorially after she wanders off to scold other partygoers. He picks up a different cracker-type thing that is topped with caviar. I allow him to place the bite-sized portion in my mouth. I chew while he waits for my reaction. For a second, my eyes roll back as I want to moan at how good it is, but I know better. The noise police aren't far away. He reaches out toward me with his thumb poised to wipe something away from my face. Only an arm tangles from behind me and grabs me around the waist. I'm scooted to the dance floor, leaving Ted looking on wide-eyed. I wipe at my mouth, fearing I won't have another chance. The music changes from contemporary to a timeless melody. I recognize the beat of a tango immediately. Although I've never danced one, I'm led expertly in the movements as I catch sight of my dance partner. I'm so surprised. My mouth must hang open the entire time. He dictates every move I make, and we must look amazing because I can see people nearby watching. His mask doesn't hide that lush, dirty blonde hair, and I'm lost in blue eyes that take me places I'm not sure I can recover from. He dips me, just as the song ends, with his mouth hovering over my neck for long seconds until he places a gentle kiss on my throat. Clapping ensues, and he rights me on my feet. I'm left to watch as he disappears into the crowd, leaving me standing alone. However, as I search for him, I spot two guys that seem familiar from that drunken night out on the sidewalk with Mandy over a week ago. I'm pretty sure they're his friends. They stare at me like they know the depths of my sins. Embarrassed, I turn away and head toward the food table where I snatch a glass of wine. I guzzle it and grab another. I open my clutch in search of my phone. We may not be allowed to talk, but no one said we can't text. Me. 911. Jenna. What's the trouble? Me. He's here. Jenna. Who's here? I don't get to answer before Ted appears. I slip the phone back in my clutch.